podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week we will be reviewing a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, book, etc. And this week we watched Just Friends. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists that I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey everyone, as always, it's Samuel.
It's me, Michael Caine. Hi, it's me.
Otherwise known as John.
Yes, otherwise known as John.
No, I'm Michael Caine.
So, I hadn't seen this one before. Had either of you seen this one before?
Oh, no.
No, I've been meaning to see it for a while because it looked funny and it's Ryan Reynolds, but I'd never seen it.
Yeah, I had seen, you know, now that I know it's 2005, that makes a lot more sense. Because when it popped up, I was like, I've seen this movie cover, but not on like Netflix or things like that. Or if I have, that's not where I first saw it. Where I first saw it was back when I was a kid going to Video Warehouse and seeing the little rental DVDs like out there. I saw that one all the time, like just the Just Friends cover of his like face getting smushed or whatever. As soon as that popped up on Prime when we pulled it up, I was like, yeah, I've seen this in Video Warehouse, of course. So I was like, this must be like pretty old. So when I saw it was 2005, I was like, oh, okay, makes sense. The timeline adds up. But yeah, I'd never seen it. I've seen other, you know, rom-coms that I really like with Ryan Reynolds, like The Proposal. I really like The Proposal.
That was a good one.
That's a funny one. So I was excited, but the only other actor that I knew, like, up front in this was Anna Faris. I had not seen Amy Smart in anything that I can remember.
No, I'm looking up her filmography right now.
Yeah.
The only thing that I think you might would have seen her, and I know I didn't, was National Lampoon's Barely Legal.
I haven't seen that National Lampoon's, no.
I'll say I've seen a few National Lampoon's.
Everything else she's been in, I haven't seen, though.
Yeah, so I know that none of us had seen it. I mean, I just figured just a classic early to mid-2000s romantic comedy, which is about what we got, you know. So this one obviously came out in 2005. It was directed by Roger Cumbel and written by Adam Davis and stars Ryan Reynolds as Chris Brander, Amy Smart as Jamie Palomino, and Anna Faris as Samantha James. And you can watch this with a premium subscription on Hulu or Sling TV, or you can buy or rent this on basically every platform: Vudu, Prime Video, YouTube, Google Play, iTunes, Apple TV, all of them. And the IMDb summary for this says, while visiting his hometown during Christmas, a man comes face to face with his old high school crush whom he was best friends with, a woman whose rejection of him turned him into a ferocious womanizer. So Samuel, tell us a little bit about our director and writer.
So the director is Roger Cumbel. He's most well known for doing the Cruel Intentions movies, but the first one and the second one he both directed and wrote both of them. He also did The Sweetest Thing and Furry Vengeance. He really hasn't done much.
Oh, he did The Sweetest Thing. Okay.
Yeah. He did a couple of rom-coms. He's done a couple of recent rom-coms, but I think he had 7 items on his filmography.
Wow.
So really not much.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of The Sweetest Thing, but my mom loves it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the writer is Adam Tex Davis. And same thing with him. He only had 3 items on his filmography that had Wikipedia pages.
What? The others didn't even have Wikipedia pages?
The others didn't have Wikipedia pages, and there are only a couple of others as well.
Wow. I mean, I did see that while I couldn't find a budget for this movie, this was a low-budget movie.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
He did this, he did Spring Break Lawyer, he did Aloha Santa. And
Aloha
those are his
Santa.
Most popular movies he's done. And Spring Break Lawyer was a TV movie.
Oh, straight to TV movie.
Yep.
Oof.
So, Not many items on the filmography for either of them.
Mm. So pretty small all around. So definitely the biggest people on this production were Ryan Reynolds and Anna Faris. 100%.
For sure. And yeah. Amy Smart. Like, Amy Smart's done a lot of stuff.
Just not, like, big, well-known stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, she was very good in this. I actually liked her a lot. But yeah, so do you guys have any starting thoughts before we start going through this plot?
Actually, you did recognize one other actor in the movie. I'm trying to look him up now, but...
Who?
You actually do know one other actor. It's Hank's character.
Hank. Which one's Hank?
Hank's the... No, it's Tim. It's Tim. I don't know why I said Hank.
Oh, yeah. No, I knew him. Oh, that's Benny!
That's Benny.
That's Benny
from
Supernatural.
Oh, that's Benny. You're right!
Last night, No, last night, I kept saying to Sam, I was like, I know I've seen him in something. Like, he kind of looks like Merle from The Walking Dead, but it's not him.
I said he looked like a discount Dave Koechner.
Yes, because Dave Koechner could have played the role just as well
absolutely,
as he could have.
Absolutely, absolutely. But
as soon as you said Tim, absolutely. It suddenly clicked that I was like, that's Benny. Okay, yeah.
You're like, I only recognize, you know, like Anne Faris minus Ryan Reynolds. I'm like, there's one other person.
Well,
How do they?
I did recognize one other person, which was Chris's mom. She's been in a few things.
He was also in Twilight.
Who was?
Tim.
Benny was in Twilight? Who was he in Twilight?
Phil in Twilight.
Phil. Who was Phil?
He was in both Breaking Dawns.
Oh, he was probably a relative. That's probably why I don't remember him, is because he was one of the
cousin
vampires.
He was also in Rise of the Planet of the Apes as one of the police officers. So, yay.
Yeah, I don't remember him from Breaking Dawn, but that would make sense that they would put him in Breaking Dawn. He has a type. It's either, you know, drunk guy or vampire or both. And that's his entire type. So going into this plot summary. So in 1995, Chris Brander, a.k.a. Ryan Reynolds, is an overweight high school senior who secretly has a huge romantic crush on his classmate and best friend, Jamie Palomino, a.k.a. Amy Smart. After confessing his feelings by writing them in Jamie's yearbook, he attends their graduation party. As he returns Jamie's yearbook to her, it is secretly swapped by her despicable ex-boyfriend, Tim, who reads the declaration aloud to everyone and humiliates Chris. Jamie doesn't reciprocate his romantic feelings. After they share a brief kiss on the cheek, Chris tearfully leaves the party, announcing that he will never return and vows to be more successful than everyone else. I told Sam he just pulled a Barney Stinson from How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, just moved out to LA.
I mean, it's a pretty classic premise. Like, we've all seen that scene done 1,000 different ways in 1,000 different movies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a rom-com. It's not going to be super crazy, like, you know, original.
Wall,
yeah.
I was like, this plot avenue, great. Cool.
No, I know when she ran into the room and just, like, you know, was drunk and, like, fell back with her legs up and Chris is like... Sam was like, oh, and I was like, no, she's just comfortable with him. That's how it works, is you don't think about that. You're just like, oh, this dude's my friend. Like, it doesn't matter.
Granted, Chris Brander probably, you know, didn't think anything of it or thought something of it, but.
But didn't assume, yeah, didn't assume it was a.
But that's because his mindset was in a different space than hers probably
right,
was.
Right. I did. No, Sam's mind went to a weird place when they said, I mean, he wasn't alone. I was kind of like, uh-oh, when Chris gets to the party and his two friends are like, you know, he asks them, oh, hey, where's Jamie? And they go, yeah, she went in the garage with the football team. And me and Sam just look at each other like, oh, no.
Okay, no, I think that was writing intentional. Like, you're supposed to infer, I think, that kind of stuff.
But then you get in there and it's not that. Like, it's just a bunch of people dancing. But I remember I looked at Sam and I was like, what is he about to walk in on? Like, this is going to be really bad for him. No, ridiculous.
That would break that poor boy.
I mean, he was broken. Are you kidding me? That was one of the most, like, horribly embarrassing things. And honestly, it wasn't that far off from, like, what would probably actually happen in reality.
No.
Like, when he's reading it out to everyone and everyone's laughing, I'm like, you know, this situation, like, they're acting it as fantastical, but it's really not, because that dude is drunk.
High schoolers are horrible people.
Yes, and they're drunk, so, like, he's gonna just read it out and not care about the consequences and be like, whatever, I'm gonna embarrass this kid.
And naturally, Chris's only coping mechanism is to deny that any of that was true.
Of course, because that's what you do when you get called out in front of everyone. You deny.
It was a joke. It was a joke. Oh, Chris, no.
But then,
although Jamie should have done more.
Oh, yeah, but she was also drunk.
She was
Remember
also
that.
Drunk out of her mind, too.
Yeah, she was. Chris was basically the only sober one. And then I think Clark and Darla were also, like, decently sober.
Enough.
They were the only
They were sober enough.
Darla.
Darla. No.
That was one of my favorite moments in the whole movie. Just Samantha Jones at the end going, I like girls, too. Darla.
Did I say her name wrong? Is it Samantha James or Samantha Jones?
Samantha Jones.
Samantha Jones.
Did I say it wrong? I definitely said Samantha James.
It's Samantha Jones.
It's Samantha Jones.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. They're so similar. I didn't know. It probably says it. No, it says Samantha James right here.
Definitely Samantha Jones.
It's look it up. Pull it up right now. Because in my thing, it says Samantha James.
The character name should be...
It says Samantha James.
That's what I'm saying. I could
have sworn it was Samantha Jones.
No, I knew it was Samantha James. Yeah, Samantha James, right there. Ha! I knew I was right. Anyway.
Where do I know Samantha Jones from?
I don't know. You made her up. I don't know who Samantha Jones is. But I know the character is Samantha James.
I Google Samantha Jones and all that comes up is Sex and the City. Apparently there's a character called that.
Oh,
Sex and
there
City.
Is a... Well, there's a character named Samantha, but, I mean, I don't know her last name. I guess it's right. Jones. But yeah, that whole scene, I remember, she runs outside and, again, she's drunk, so, like, I can't blame her too much, but I felt so bad for the kid because she's, like, leading him on and being, like, a little bit. Not intensely, but she's, like... You know, like, I love you too. And he's, like, so excited. And then she's like a brother. And it's like, you can't, I know you're drunk, but don't say that to someone who just said that they, like, love you. And, like, all this stuff about how much they love you. And the fact that they want to be more than friends. Like, you just have to do what she did at the end to Dusty, where she's like, you're so sweet, I just don't have those feelings for you. You can't go up and be like, no, I love you, but more like a brother. I say that as someone who has done that to someone in high school, where they came up and confessed feelings, and I was like, I mean, I just see you more as like a brother, and that was the end of our friendship, so.
Yeah, sometimes you just gotta be out front with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Especially, you can't follow up with the line, did you mean everything you wrote in the yearbook? And he's like, well, yeah, and then sit there and follow up with, oh, I love you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like a brother. No.
You need to lead with, hey, I really appreciate everything you wrote, but I don't feel that way. Like, that's what you need to do. I mean, it still would have killed him, but it would have been less of a, like, bait and switch, like what she did, which was leaning in and then dodging his kiss. Like, yeah.
That is straight up just suplexing someone's entire heart.
Yeah.
Like at least, like, you know, like, you can cushion a little bit, but by leading with, I love you like a brother. Like, no.
Don't do that to the guy. You gotta do... I mean, you can see she got better at explaining her feelings later on. Because to Dusty, she was very clear and very mature about it.
Absolutely. I think that's the whole point of her character arc is the maturity level.
Yeah, that she just... Yeah, she learns from that big mistake where she lost her best friend, and she's like, I don't want to do that to any more guys, so I'm just going to, like, always be honest about whether or not I'm interested in somebody. Which, I mean, I could have told the guy she wasn't interested in him. Like, it was very clear. Even when he was, like, playing that song at, like, her family's house or whatever, she was just looking at him like, oh, this is nice.
And she would always leave as soon as Chris got there.
Oh, as soon as. Yeah. Yeah,
If she was actually interested in him, then every time Chris would try to pull her away, she'd be like, no.
Yeah, but she always went with Chris, like 100%. Dusty was just, he was grasping at straws. It was never going to happen. So flash forward, and in 2005, Chris has lost weight, he's handsome, and he lives in Los Angeles, and he's a womanizer and a highly successful record producer. Prior to Christmas, Chris's employer, company CEO KC, played by, I guess, the actor Steven Root, asks Chris to accompany an emerging self-obsessed pop singer named Samantha James, a.k.a. Anna Faris.
A.k.a. Britney Spears.
Yes, whom Chris once went out with and ended up in the hospital afterwards, to Paris to ensure she signs with their label, an order to which Chris reluctantly complies.
Is it just me, or does Anna Faris even kind of look like Britney Spears?
No, she does.
No, she hardcore, like, it... I genuinely thought, like, I had to go back and look at the cast list halfway through because I'm like, this looks too much like Britney Spears for it not to be Britney Spears. Yeah.
Like, they hardcore. Like, I'm surprised Britney Spears didn't sue them.
I mean, it was 2005. That would have been, what, right in the middle of her whole meltdown?
Right in the middle of her whole, Right in the middle of her whole transition.
Yeah, where, like, she shaved her head and, like, went everywhere and did all that. Was that 2005?
I feel like that was right around that time.
Yeah, it would have been around that time.
About there.
During the trip to Paris, Samantha accidentally sets her private jet on fire, resulting in an emergency landing in New Jersey near Chris's hometown.
I just wanted to punch her so bad. Whenever I saw, like, I'm like... The moment that she started unboxing her food and started going towards Michael, I'm like, no, please.
Also,
no.
You know she's the worst kind of person because she heated up fish in an enclosed, unable to be aired out area, where like people are going to be walking through and going to have to just smell that fish smell for the entire flight.
It's not even also, like good fish, it's
I
tuna.
I don't think a microwave burning like that would be enough to ground a plane.
Well, I mean, it's a fire on a plane, though.
Yeah, but it's not that bad of a fire and it's very easily taken care of. I don't think that would ground a plane. I'm pretty positive that wouldn't.
I don't know. I don't know enough about flight to know if that is good or
not. It seemed pretty contrived to me.
I mean, it definitely could have been. They needed a reason for him to have to go back to his hometown.
Yeah.
So why not make it be because of crazy Samantha? I out loud laughed when she, you know, is crazy all over him because, you know, they had dated before and apparently she's like, oh my gosh, like, you're back.
You're back. Here, bend down. Let me give you a blowjob.
Exactly. She forces him on the couch and then starts unbuttoning his pants and pulls them down and then she goes, oh, I just wrote a new song and runs to the other couch and his pants just sort of slide down to the floor and he's just sitting in his underwear like staring at her while she's playing this like not good song. And it was just so funny the way he's just frozen. Like, if I don't move, maybe nothing will go wrong.
Ryan Reynolds is a comedic genius. He really is.
He did really well with the comedy in this movie.
He is a comedic genius.
He did very well.
Well, because that's the thing is, in the last couple of years, he's become known as an action star because of Deadpool and Hitman's Bodyguard and all that crap. But, like, he started out, he was a rom-com actor.
Well, yeah.
Like, that was his whole thing.
That was the first thing I ever saw him in was The Proposal.
I was going to say,
he was a rom-com and, like, dramatic romantic movie.
Well, because he was in Love Actually, right? Or he was either in Love Actually or he was in Definitely Maybe.
He was not in Love Actually.
I think he was in Definitely Maybe.
He was not in Love Actually.
Because I think he was the one who was talking. He was, like, either the dad or the uncle of, like, the little girl in Definitely Maybe. It was one of those things.
Because Love Actually was Liam Neeson and then Rick.
And Rick.
Andrew Lincoln, the guy who plays Rick from Walking Dead.
He was in Love Actually?
Oh, yeah. That was, like, one of his first big roles.
I haven't seen enough of these rom-coms.
He was the guy who held the cards up and all.
Don't talk to me about it, because I haven't seen it, and I won't be able to relate to what you're saying.
I mean, I haven't seen it either. I just know memes from it and stuff.
I haven't seen enough rom-coms, which is surprising, considering who my mom is. I've seen a lot, but not enough, apparently. I haven't seen enough of, like, the classic ones. I've seen just random weird ones that my mom pulls up. Yeah, no, that scene cracked me up. Really, yeah, I mean, Ryan Reynolds just did really well with the comedy in this movie. I appreciated all of his just, like, little choices that he would make, just the very subtle things that he slipped in there. I thought it was very funny. But yeah, Anna Faris
Although,
did a great job being a psycho,
saying that any
though.
Of this movie is subtle is a little bit
No. But the most subtle things were the things that Ryan Reynolds did. Yeah, because this is a 2005 rom-com. Why would it be subtle?
Nothing about this movie is subtle. I was telling John that if I had a complaint about this movie in terms of, like, just the things I didn't like about it, that would probably be one of them, is that a lot of it's just really overdone.
Well, yeah, I mean, at every turn, you think that the crazy part of the movie is done, and then it's not, and something crazier happens in every next scene, and it's like, okay.
Yeah. You get numb to it after a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. They could have built up to it a little better so that, like, the final just chaos of everything being set on fire and all that would have, like, landed a little better.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole movie was just sheer chaos. Yeah, so Chris takes Samantha to his mother's house to spend the night and re-engages with his teenage past, including his unresolved feelings for Jamie. Samantha meets Chris's mother and 18-year-old brother, Mike.
Mike is the best.
I loved Mike.
Yeah, dude, Mike, the chemistry between Ryan Reynolds and the actor was
so
good.
I was telling Sam, I was like, this might be one of the most accurate, like, brothers portrayals in a rom-com that I've ever seen.
Especially towards, like, right whenever Chris has to go over to Jamie's right before, but, like, his mom had made cookies the day or night prior. Mikey comes in. I forget what he says exactly, but he's like, I love you, and hands him a cookie.
Yes.
And so I was like, and they both just walk out, and he's like, I love you too. I'm like, that's actually pretty damn accurate.
No, yeah,
pretty damn accurate.
Where they're sitting there and, like, they slap each other, they fight, they're, like, yelling at each other, calling each other names, and then he just goes, I love you too. Hands him a cookie, walks out. I loved it so much. No, everything between them I thought was perfect.
The dynamic
I
was
loved
perfect.
It.
Great casting.
All the fighting, I was like, this is exactly what brothers would do. And it made sense because they fought more and more as the movie went on, and the whole thing was, I was telling Sam, you again, if you've seen that, did basically the same thing where Kristen Bell comes back and, like, you know, in high school she had, like, breakouts and braces and, like, you know, she just, and glasses and all this stuff. But then she goes off and she, you know, her skin clears up. She takes the braces off. Like, everything gets better. She gets contacts. And then when she comes back home, because she's getting, like, sucked into this girl from her past who's now marrying her brother, right, all these horrible things happen to where she basically looks exactly like she did in high school by the end of it because of just all these horrible accidents. And it was just like this movie. I was like, I don't know how they're going to make him fat again, but they got him the braces at least, or the retainer.
Which was also contrived because I don't think you would have a retainer in that instance.
If you get hit
in the mouth with a hockey puck, I don't think in any way that would result in you needing a retainer.
Probably not, but also I don't know anything about dentistry, so I can't really say anything.
Not a category I'm familiar with, buddy, yes. So...
This is not something I acknowledge.
The legitimacy of that moment is unfamiliar to all of us, so we're just going to assume that it works.
Yes. Any dentists out there can let us know if it's accurate. If you get hit in the mouth with a hockey puck, will you need a retainer until the stitches come out, as he said? So let us know if that's something that happens. No, I was... Anna Faris is insane. And her whole thing with constantly, like, grabbing his crotch in front of his mother
was crazy.
Like, she kept just, like, grabbing his leg and then grabbing his crotch just, like, back and forth. It, like, in front of his mother, who's just, like, trying so hard to not react and be like, oh, okay. Oh.
The scene with, like, oh, I slapped the ham to it many times, like, I hope it's not the ham I just bought.
I know. I told Sam.
Oh, my goodness.
I told Sam, I was like, they are having three different conversations. Like, she was like, oh, like, you have my poster on your wall. And he's like, yeah, I slapped the ham to it an hour ago. And she's like, what ham? I hope it's not that ham I just bought. And Chris is just like, what is happening in this room? Like, we need to go. No, it was great. I did really like the friends, Clark and Darla. I wish there was more with them, though.
Yeah, they were pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I liked them a lot whenever they were on screen, either of them. Especially Clark, who at the end, when he drops off Chris for the last time, and Chris gets out of his car, he's just like, yeah, okay, thanks, Clark, for everything. See ya in another 10 years, I guess. I'm just like, yeah, that's about how he treats these guys, is he just didn't talk to them for forever and just disappeared off to L.A., No, but I loved them a lot. They were really cool. And they were like an actual successful relationship and like doing well as opposed to every other relationship in this movie.
I was gonna say, like, out of all the graduates out of that class,
they were definitely doing the best.
They were definitely doing the best. Especially got to Tim in the bar.
Oh gosh, Tim.
Talk about just a decline.
Oh yeah. He peaked in high school for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. I feel like peaked. That's most jocks though.
I mean, I it depends like most, on the jock.
I feel
depends.
Like a lot of jocks go really downhill. A lot of the, like, mean jocks go,
okay,
like, really
okay, that's
downhill.
Probably true. Because there's one guy who went to my high school who was, like, the nicest guy. Like, I think he was a baseball player, which at our school, it wasn't football that was cool. It was baseball. And, hey. Yeah, you would have loved my high school. But a lot of the baseball players got in, not because of how everyone else got in, which was passing, like, a math test, a writing test, a reading test to get in, because I went to a magnet school. They just let the baseball guys in no matter what, even if they had, like, a bad record or, like, things like that, and would just let them in. And they would just be these skeevy, horrible guys who were gross, who would fail every class, but they would get pushed on through because they were the good baseball players. But there was one guy on the baseball team who was actually genuinely nice. Like, he was a good guy. He never, like, you know, he never really did anything that was, like, hugely wrong or gross or mean or anything like that. I mean, he talked to me, and I was a loser in high school, so, like, that means he's a nice guy. And, like, now I see that, like, he's doing great. I think he's married now. Like, you know, he's working in, like, some sort of ministry. Like, he's doing really well for himself. So, like, not all jocks, but definitely, like, jocks who their peak is high school because that was the only time that anyone wanted to be around them because they're just terrible people. Yes, I agree. They usually peak in high school. I just love that Samuel, who didn't go to a public high school, hey is yo. Like, I think the jocks always peak in high school. I'm like, well, how would you know?
I think mean jocks always peak in
Again,
high school.
Again, how would you know? You didn't go to high school.
I live in the same world as you guys.
But yes, so obviously 18-year-old brother Mike is obsessed with Samantha, has not just the one super dirty poster on his wall, but every poster on his wall that she has, like, ever had. So at the local bar, Chris encounters some old classmates, including his other best friend Clark and his wife Darla, who are awesome. He also encounters Jamie, who is working as a bartender to support herself through grad school to become a teacher. Chris plans to impress and seduce Jamie by having Mike keep Samantha busy during his date with Jamie, but the realization that Jamie's platonic friendship is important to him hampers Chris's plan. Because his whole thing is, he's, like, being a jerk the entire time, which was always his goal with, like, the L.A. ladies, was to just be mean and, like, put them down and, like, never go on day dates and everything. But he like, changes his play for Jamie, and then he quickly realizes, okay, this isn't gonna work. Like, she apparently doesn't like this type of guy anymore. Like, this isn't gonna work. Because the whole time, I'm like, dude, she clearly wanted to be around you for, like, 10 years.
Well, and I don't think it was as much that he realized that, oh, this isn't gonna work, as he realized that, oh, this sucks. Like, I'm not having a good time. I'm being an asshole to her. This isn't what I want. That's what I took away from that, like, whole scene where he's yelling in the car. I didn't think it was as much that he was upset because, oh, it didn't work. And he was more upset that, like, why am I being like
this? Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I think it was him realizing, like, oh, okay, maybe I shouldn't do this. Like, mm-hmm. you know, this isn't something I can enjoy.
Yeah.
That scene was, that car scene was great.
I loved it. Him just screaming
and
at himself.
The slow reveal of Jamie just
just appearing outside the door. And I love that she, like, she kind of smiles for a second. Because I think even she realized what that moment was. Was, like, Chris coming back a little bit and, like, realizing maybe he shouldn't act like this. Because for a moment, she kind of, like, smiles at it.
Yeah, I saw that briefly, but I'm like, is that just, like, because I thought the same thing, too. I'm like, is that just that? Or is that just, is that just Jamie's actress breaking character because Ryan's losing?
Hey, well, if it was her breaking character, we justified it in our minds, so it's okay.
How would you not break character during a movie with Ryan Reynolds? Honestly, especially because he's known for his improv.
Oh, you know that whole car scene was just...
Oh, absolutely.
They said, just go for it. And he just improv that entire thing. I love it so much. Especially when he starts, like, talking back and forth and making fun of himself, like, saying, like, just douchey things back and forth. I loved it so much. And then she's just like, I left my gloves in the car. And he's like, oh, okay, yeah. Here you go. See you later. And just, like, really quick, like, composes himself and drives away super normally. Like, I love it so much. No, he did so well with that. But yeah, so during a friendly ice skating day date, Chris is taken away in an ambulance after injuring himself during a hockey game with Jamie and a trio of kids who start to share a dislike on him for his inexperience. And at the scene, Jamie is reunited with Dusty Dinkelman, a paramedic and former high school nerd who was also in love with her, while Chris is taunted by all of the kids in town for making them lose the game. Yes, John.
Yo, why were these... To be fair, Chris wasn't the nicest to the kids, but why were all the kids in
this
town just...
Chris straight up punched a kid in the head.
To be fair... This was after the kids were doing that to him as well. The kids were like...
I was going
to
say, he got wailed on
by a chick for a solid minute.
Well, yes, but a 30-year-old man is not supposed to stoop to the level of
I'm
a 7-year-old.
I'm not justifying it, but I'm saying that's why. Like
the surmounting...
It wasn't justified, but it was understandable.
The outburst makes sense because at this point, he's frustrated with the rental skates because this man, he's... pretty decent at hockey too, so
yeah,
because
he plays in a league over in LA. Yeah,
he's frustrated. He can't impress this girl to save his life, and these kids are just treating him like absolute crap. So the outburst of him just decking these kids from a story standpoint, make sense. Because
he goes through it at first, he just, like, sweeps the leg, and I'm like, ooh, that wasn't good. And then he goes and just clocks one of the kids in the side of the head, and I was like, no.
Let's talk about just that, and the immediate cut to Jamie just, no.
Just, Chris, no. Because she's all their, like, substitute teacher.
Yeah, but let's talk about the irony, though, of that ending scene where he hits, where he, first off, he calls the kid out, and, like, he's absolutely ready to just ram this puck into this kid's head. But the fact that he misses, and it comes back.
Yes, he hits the bar, and it goes right back into his face. I'm just like, dude. No, that was, like, I think that was the first truly insane scenes of the movie.
Yeah.
And there were several. There were several insane scenes, but that was, like, the first one where the absurdity just, like, went through the roof. Because this movie played a lot with just absolutely absurd circumstances. Plus, I find it slightly hard to believe that Jamie wasn't instantly yelling at him about beating up these children. And was instead super focused on, oh, are you okay? Oh my goodness, Dusty. And like, I'm like, why aren't you yelling at him? He just punched a 7-year-old, like, in the head.
Because they're all wearing protective gear?
Still, you're a 30-year-old. That's a 7-year-old. He clocked her. Like, I mean, unacceptable, dude. Not acceptable. If I were
also,
Jamie.
Also, those kids were a little older than 7.
Okay.
Those were like 10, 11 year olds.
They were like 5th or 6th graders.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. A 30-year-old punching an 11-year-old. Is that better?
Actually, yes.
I don't think it's better. It's just as bad.
Oh, jeez. I don't know that. Because the first date night was kind of like, not too much crazy happened. The only crazy thing was car freakout scene. And I love the way
the waitress.
No, I love the way the friend described it as the body shake.
Oh yeah. Where he tries to lean in and kiss her. But the fact was, he had already acted like such a douche the entire lunch. Like, she wasn't gonna kiss him. Are you kidding
me? He was too focused on his escape, and that's that's what I love about what you see with Chris, is that he slowly reverts back to his old self.
Which the old self is what Jamie liked. So, like, exactly. Yeah, you need to be your old self if you want to be with her.
And he was so busy trying to escape himself that he didn't even really think about how he was acting or looking.
Yeah.
He was just too busy, like, that's not me. And he's like, oh, chubby bunny. You notice he's constantly trying to dodge the fat jokes, and he's, like, calling everybody.
No, yeah. I mean, I understood him being upset, but also I understand Jamie being like, hey, she probably doesn't know any better. She's just joking around with you, and she doesn't think it's upsetting you. So, like, you need to calm down and not lash out at her.
Oh,
like,
yeah, no, absolutely. I'm not justifying his acts whatsoever.
No, because
like,
the woman,
there would have been a better way to sit there and tell that waitress, like, hey, I appreciate it. That's what I normally get, but, like, can we, like, do
yeah, you could
else?
Have even said, you know, it's really sweet that you remember me after all these years and that you remember exactly what I used to order, but, you know, this isn't what I want, so can I have this instead? And even if she had been like, but it's what you always order, it's like, yeah, you know, I'm just not in the mood for it today. He could have just done that and just been like, yeah, I'm just in the mood for something more, like, savory today.
Yeah,
and he could have just played it off like that, but instead he had to go and, like, be mean. And at that point I was like, okay, yeah, Jamie has a right to kind of be like, hey, calm down. Like, it's okay. Like, I get
here,
it.
You can have my sandwiches, I'll have your pancakes, all
yes.
right?
And instead, he's like, I'll just enjoy this water. And I'm like, don't be such a baby. Eat the sandwich.
Stuffed.
Like,
what?
Don't be such a little baby about everything.
Don't be a butt about it, dude. Like, come on.
You're on a date with this girl that you've been in love with for, your like, almost your whole life.
I will say, those pancakes were a lot.
Oh, my gosh. I looked at them and I was like, he ordered this every time? This is so much sugar.
Like, yo, Russell, I think, would physically vomit at the sight of that.
Like, it was
because Russell has a very adamant distaste for sugary anything.
Yeah.
So, like, he can, like, handle, like, a bite or two of desserts at most. I like sugar just as much as the next bigger guy.
But I couldn't,
like,
eat that.
I'm like, no, dude, that's... What we had, like, chocolate.
It was like 5 pancakes coated in chocolate and sprinkles and something else, like whipped cream.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is too much. This is too much.
Too much on pancakes.
Yeah. Like you don't need all of that. Maybe like, one.
Like on pancakes, I think the most you should have is like maybe whipped cream and some sort of fruit.
Even a chocolate drizzle is okay.
You can have
sometimes.
A chocolate drizzle, yeah. But it wasn't a drizzle. It was like she poured a gallon of chocolate syrup on the plate, and I was like, this is too much chocolate.
It looked like they should have just... They didn't even use chocolate sauce. They just took chocolate icing and just went...
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my goodness, no wonder he was so big. Like, if he was eating this every time he came to this diner, that's too much sugar. That's too much sugar. How did he not develop diabetes? Like, I don't understand.
I'm sure he had diabetes.
Like, I don't get it. Yeah, no, that was insane. But yeah, I was on kind of both sides with the restaurant because I was like, she shouldn't be acting this way towards, like, a guy who looks better now. But also, women that are that age tend to not realize they're being insulting, especially like
no, because like, it's a time gap difference.
Yeah, like, they think they're being cute and funny by like remembering what you used to be, which like his nickname I guess was the Chubby Bunny, and so like she just thinks it's a cute little callback, whereas for him like, it's like reflecting on the worst part of his life. Like
exactly, because yeah. At that point he'd been bullied for so long that it's like, could you not bring that up? Like,
yeah.
I finally get over that, and now I'm stuck here for a whole day, and I have to hear it all over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, I understood both sides, but I felt like he just needed to, like, just grin and bear it and just get through the conversation so that they could enjoy their lunch, and instead he just ruined their lunch.
Oh,
so,
absolutely.
Obviously, the body shake was going to happen because she's not going to kiss him after that. You don't kiss a guy after they're rude to a server. That's a real thing. If tips for anyone who's single out there, if you are rude to a server on a date, you will probably not be asked to go out again.
Where's
just
my
gonna
notebook?
Say that.
Where's my notebook?
John, write this down.
Let's be honest, John would never be rude to a server.
No, you wouldn't be rude to a server.
No. I don't think that's physically possible for me.
Yeah, if you're on a date,
how much I deal with customer service, I don't even think just even me by myself on going out to dinner, I could not tip or be nice to a waitress.
No, that's why I was so offended when everyone thought I was being rude at Candace's birthday. I was like, I am not being rude. I don't
even remember that.
No,
actually.
because I told the guy that, you know, I wanted another drink because by the time he got back, mine was going to be done. And like, all I thought was just, I'm going to finish this in the next, like, 5 seconds, so I know it's going to be, like, I'm ready for another one. But everyone thought I was being rude and saying that he was going to take so long that, like, that then I would be ready. And I was like, no, that's not what I was saying at all. Like, incorrect.
I didn't take it that way, but also, like, I barely remember what I had for breakfast 2 days ago.
No, I remember I was so offended by that because I was like, I would never be rude to a server on purpose ever. So like, ever. I was not being mean. And I don't think he took it that way, but everyone else took it that way. So I was deeply offended by it. But anyway.
Tangent.
Yes. Anyway, so the next night, Chris goes to Jamie's for a Christmas party, planning to reveal his feelings for her because he found his old like notes saying a bunch of reasons why she was amazing and putting them in like a Christmas card, which was very cute. I thought that was nice. That was very cute, especially since she can obviously tell that that is like an old sheet of paper. Mm-hmm. So like she knows that that's how he's felt about her for like ever. But yeah, but then he finds Dusty already there winning the guests over with his charm and musical talents. So back at Chris's place, Samantha ambushes Mike and demands to find out Chris's location, which first off, let's not skip over the massage scene.
Oh, gosh.
With Samantha and Mike, where she's sitting there and, like, I have straight up heard, like, girls that I, like, was friends with in high school and college tell me exactly what she told him, which was just, I haven't had sex in so long and I'm so horny, and like whine about it. And I'm like, I'm sorry, do you want me to do something about this? Because I'm not gonna. Like, I don't know what you want from me right now. I didn't need to know this about you, but you're telling me and I can't help you here. So
like, what do you want?
Like, no. So that conversation just threw me back to all those conversations where I just sat there and went, sorry, dude. I don't know how to help you in this situation.
That's the first time I've ever heard of any kind of that conversation between two people. I'm like, This is a little far-fetched for me, but okay.
And then she immediately goes, so how old are you? And he starts by overdoing
22.
His age.
22! 21, 20, 19.
I'm 18. 18. And she,
18.
And she's like, 18? And like is like super turned on by
and,
it?
You know, and then she asks him like...
Hey, you know what, though? He's 18. It's fine.
Oh, no, it's fine. As, I'm not mad honestly, about it.
She's probably not that much older than him.
She's probably mid-20s.
Oh, yeah, it's not
yeah.
like... Yeah. I'm sure the age gap is not obscene.
No. And like I always say, as long as you are two consenting adults, I don't really care.
Exactly.
So, like, as long as he's 18, I'm like, whatever. Like, that's fine.
But did she ask him the really awkward question of, so, like, how many times do you...
Yeah.
Slap the ham to it. It's
and
like,
he's like, eight times. And she goes, eight? At which point I went, eight? That is so many times.
Nah, that's too much.
That's too much in a day, dude.
In a day, like, that's gotta
that,
be some sort of
that
disorder.
That is about to get you to, like, dehydration. Like,
yeah,
you need to be drinking a ton of water if that's how often you're doing that. And she's like, that's so hot. And I'm like, no, it's not.
It's like...
Honestly, what was probably hot to her about it is that, oh, he can go eight times in a day?
Probably.
Wow, like, his rebound time must be amazing. Like,
I mean, yeah, that's the only thing I can imagine, but like...
The only part of that scene I didn't buy was that she didn't immediately jump his bones. Because with how crazy, like, hard up she was, I was like, I feel like she would have just immediately pounced on him. And instead, she's like, yeah, my back is sore. And he's like, I could give you a massage. And she's like, yes. And then she just, like, you know, takes off her shirt and it's just like, oops, I'm naked now. And just, like, lays down. And I'm like, she is not this coy. Like, she would 100% would have just pounced on him.
She straight up, like, force gripped Ryan Reynolds' crotch every other scene. There's no reason why this chick's character shouldn't just immediately jump this kid.
It was amazing when he comes in and just rips his brother off and is beating the crap out of him. It was so funny. Again, super accurate brother relationship.
Oh, absolutely.
It was fantastic. And she's just like, where have you been? And it's just like screaming at him. And starts, like, laughing in his face about his, like, retainer that he now has in his mouth. We totally skipped the scene where she, like, I thought she died.
Oh,
when she falls off the balcony.
I was like, we'll just. I was like, I'll hold
no,
off.
I don't think we skipped that. I just don't think we've gotten there yet.
No, we have.
That happened okay. Right when they got.
No, because
town.
Remember, he's like, oh, this is Beach or Bono or something. He had to take a call.
Yeah.
And that was him talking to his brother. It's like, so, like, what if? And that's where he flicks the taser.
Yeah.
And just tases.
Yeah, I guess that was the first time they went out. So yeah.
I thought she had died when she fell, and I heard someone go, oh my
God!
I thought, like, her head had busted open, and I was like, did she just die in a side cut scene? Like, is she dead? And then, like, and then he's like...
Him coming back to that after scene.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, look... She's a little bit concussed.
She's got a little headache.
But she's totally fine.
She's got a giant ice pack on her head, and she's eating toothpaste out of the tube, and is just sitting there like just...
Shirtless.
Yeah, like just chilling. Anna Faris is so good at being so crazy and just going 100% with the craziness. That, like...
So good.
She comes up to his face and just spits, like, a glob of toothpaste down his face. And he's just having to keep his cool on the phone while I think he's talking to Jamie.
No, he's talking to his boss.
Oh, his boss.
Oh, yeah, because his boss, like, here, let me talk to her. And he's like, she's a bit
incapacitated. And that's when he comes up, that's when she comes up and just, bleh, like, toothpaste all over his face. And he's just, like, keeping his cool. Keeping his cool. Not gonna do anything. I was just like, oh my gosh.
Oh, it was so gross.
Oh, it was disgusting. But it was also perfect because that's what would have happened if you were that concussed and like that messed up. No, it was great.
She fell off of like at least two stories at the most.
Yes,
because
it was the mezzanine at the mall. So it's probably like 100 feet that she just like boom fell.
And it's so funny. She's like working on a new song and then like the kid's, like, playing with a taser, but I totally didn't expect flick taser.
No, I didn't expect that
right
either.
It just fell off. I was like, oh, my goodness. I think I out loud laughed at that. That was
a good one because it was so fast and so unexpected. That was good. But yeah, so anyway. So Samantha ambushes Mike, wants to find out where Chris is because... she knows that Chris has been lying to her now because she pretended to be asleep and heard him saying he was going to go hang out with Jamie.
Smart move by Samantha.
Which also, I was like, at that point, all Mike says is he's with his lover. And she just knows where that is and storms off, which I realize later it's because she took Mike with her and Mike told her where the house
I
was.
I love when they pull up and he's just hanging out of the car window, just, the jig is up,
run! And he's like trying to get out of the car, but he's flopping like a fish because he can't get out. I loved it so much.
Mike is the best part of this movie.
He really is so funny. I love
but
Mike.
But also, that's the most brotherly thing you can say to somebody is like, you know you goofed up, but you're like, yo, dude, I'm giving you a 5-second head start. Run for your life, man.
Yeah, dude. Because he gives up where Chris has gone after she, like, invades his mouth with her tongue. Because I can't call what she does kissing.
No, that's not kissing.
No,
it's
just licking someone's mouth aggressively is what she does. Because she did it to Chris, and then she did it to Mike. Luckily, she didn't do it to Darla. Thank God. Darla was safe from her tongue.
That was an actual kiss.
Yes, because she kissed Clark like a little peck, and then she lingered with Darla for a while, and both Clark and Chris are like, what? What's going on here?
It was like a solid 5-second kiss.
It was a long time, and Darla just like afterwards is like, she's adorable. Like, she seems nice. So in a rage, she drives to Jamie's house and crashes through her fence. I thought she was going to go straight into the house. I wasn't expecting her to stop in the yard. I was like, she's going to tear this house down. And she destroys her family's Christmas decorations, which were insane, by the way. Her Christmas decorations were super... No, Sam would not say that's excessive.
A little bit of it was excessive.
Really?
Some of it was tacky, and you can't go tacky.
Which parts were tacky?
I'm not a big fan, and you know this, I'm not a big fan of, like, blow-ups and
inflatables
and even just like the Santa and the reindeer and all that. I'm not always a big fan of all that. I just like lights.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was just excessive.
That's fair.
Excessive ornamentation in the yard.
Yeah, that's fair.
The yard needs to be pretty clear. The house and like trees and all that need to be covered in lights, but everything else needs to be pretty clear. You can have like one nativity set up. So it was a moment in this movie, and we can cut this out later if you want.
No, I'll actually say it, Samuel. So there was a moment where Sam suddenly went, I think I just figured out my sexuality. And it was when it first cuts to like 2005, and it's whatever Christmas party he's at, where there's like the girl that's like barely dressed in like flouncy wintry stuff inside the little cage on the swing, and it's Christmas, and there's like Christmassy jazz playing in the background, and Sam is like, I think I just discovered my sexuality. He was like, Christmas plus naked women plus jazz is my sexuality. And I was just like,
that's his type.
But yeah, so the whole family Christmas decorations is destroyed, which I had to respect Jamie. I told Sam, I was kind of shocked that Jamie didn't, like, back down from Psycho Samantha and actually, like, bucked up on her and started, like, fighting back, even though she had no reason to, except that the girl was fighting her.
Cat fight!
But I loved it.
Mikey.
I loved it because, like, I feel like that is something that Jamie, from what we've seen, would do. And she was a cheerleader in high school. She dealt with crazy girls all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
And she knows that you have to, like, buck up and fight or else they're gonna, like, rip you apart.
I just love the fact that, like, nothing really happened, like, as far as, like, literally one shoved the other and the other shoved back.
And then people pulled them apart.
Instantly broken up. But Mikey over here, can't fight!
Mike, dude. I love
dude,
Mike.
Mike, legend. Absolute legend. We should have saw that, though, whenever he walked in, like, with a big street sign for a sled. And it's,
yeah.
Like, I was like, that's obnoxiously big, but hey, that fits the character.
Yep. But yeah, so Chris returns home super embarrassed, and Jamie follows him. She tells him she's not mad, and they end up spending the night together catching up and looking at photos. However, due to Chris's continuing lack of assertion, the two end up just sleeping, and nothing happens that night. Which I told Sam, I was like...
And she's like, here you go!
Yeah, Jamie is straight up doing all the classy moves that a girl can do to, like, make it obvious that she wants to get it on.
Without throwing her...
Because you gotta stay classy. You can't be
like... Yes. Also, from a writing standpoint, they wanted to drastically, like, differentiate Samantha from Jamie as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because Samantha is constantly just throwing herself after throwing herself at him over and over again. And Chris is like, no, stop it. Why? Why? It's not a paw pad.
Yeah, I love
that line. It's not a paw pad. And then they want Jamie to be this classy, you know, like, old high school buddy.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it.
No, I respected Jamie. She was doing all the right things to make the guy know she's interested and, like, wants to fool around and, like, do stuff. He just, like, he picked it up. He just didn't do anything. And she, of course, is just like, did I not do enough? But no, she did everything you're supposed to do. She wore one of his shirts and nothing else. If she comes around the door and is like, hey, in like, one of his shirts and no pants... That's your cue, buddy. Like, no girl does that and honestly, is not trying to hit on you. And then she, like, gets into bed and she, like, puts her hand on his chest all playfully and is, like, holding his hand and, like, intertwining her fingers.
I was saying they are intertwined. I'm like,
I was like,
buddy.
She is giving you everything. She even did the cold feet move that she said in the next scene. She's like, I did the cold feet move. And I'm like, yeah, that's what you do is you're like, hey, I'm cold. Can you come over and, like, warm me up? That's the whole physical contact thing of, like, breaking the ice. She did everything you're supposed to do as the classy girl, and he did nothing.
That internal monologue, though,
that
of
was
just
great.
Chris.
He's just like, you don't deserve a penis.
I love it. It's like, you're not going to make a move, are you? And the monologue just stops there. It just cuts to black. I'm like, that was great. However, I'm a little spoiled because anytime I hear the internal monologue... And Ryan Reynolds is voicing it. I can only think of Deadpool.
Yeah.
And it's like... It's,
because Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool.
It's like the same way that Hugh Jackman is just Wolverine. It's just...
I think it's different, though, because... Like, Hugh Jackman is Wolverine, but Wolverine's personality is not Hugh Jackman's personality.
Exactly. That
Wade
is a
Wilson's
fair assessment.
Personality is Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, he's just playing a slightly uppity version of...
He's playing a superhero version of himself.
Yes.
That's all he's doing.
No, that scene cracked me up because I was watching and I was like, I mean, I've been there where I've tried to drop all the hints and just nothing happens. And then, like, when I tell the guy, he's like, oh, I wasn't sure. And I'm like, that's what a classy girl will do because they don't want to be the one to instigate. Because it makes you feel, like, slutty, and so you don't want to do that. You want the guy to be the first one to do it. It's a whole sexist thing, but it's how, like, it's how culture has made it out to be, where if you're a classy bitch, you don't want to be the one, like, jumping on some dude. You want to be the one that, like, you know, sort of just, like, really classily, like, lures the guy in and is like,
right.
Oh, like, using all these little pretenses to, like, do these things.
I get that. It's just, I don't know. At that point, at the point they were at, like, if you have tried everything, I don't know why she didn't, like, I don't know. That's a weird situation, especially with the bond they have. It's not like, at that point, like, you know, why not try and initiate? But I get why she did from a character's perspective.
Yeah, I think for her, she just really wanted it to be him finally... You know, making that move,
stepping into
a place of, like, you know, confidence with her. I think that's especially what's attractive about a guy, like, making the first move, especially, you know, obviously if it's consented, is when, you know, you see that the guy is, like, you know, it has that confidence with you and is, like,
right.
And is willing to make that first move. Like,
absolutely.
That's very, very attractive. And so, like, I understood why she was so bummed about, like, him just not doing it. She's like, he's still as insecure as always. Great. Like, yeah, I 100% got it. Yeah. But yeah, so the next day, Jamie speaks with Darla about the night before. And
best scene.
Darla's like, maybe he's gay. Like,
the whole dealing with, like, Because there's a constant, like, back and forth between... What's the guy best friend's name? I keep forgetting. Clark. I keep saying Kent, but I'm thinking Superman. It's just constantly cutting between Clark and Chris's conversation. Because they're both just equally frustrated. And that's where it's like, there it is.
But I loved Chris's conversation with Clark, though. Because he's like, you know, I just kept thinking about, like, what happens after we sleep together? Do I move back here? Does she move to L.A.? And Clark's like, I thought you just wanted to, like, sleep with her. And he's like, and that's when it clicks with Chris, like, oh, it was never about that. Like, it was never about some sort of, like, revenge. It was never about, like, you know, I'm finally gonna sleep with this girl that never, you know, gave me any of that satisfaction back in high school. And instead, he's, like, actually serious about it. Because I don't think he even knew that he was as serious about it as he was until he said that to Clark. And then he was like, oh.
I think that was definitely the clicking moment. I mean, naturally, the beautiful thing about comedies is the audience kind of starts getting the gist of things beforehand. That's what makes a punchline that much better. But it's constantly just him, like, sitting there and you're like, and that's where I think his confidence flops a lot of the time, is that it's like, this is not like every other relationship he's had.
Yeah.
It's him constantly sitting there and just like, you know, like one night, like, as he says, he's just dating.
Yeah. Like, he's just like having fun. And the one time he tries to pull off like a smooth instigating move was with the skating, when he did what would have been a pretty smooth and, like, you know, attractive move, where he's like, well, maybe I'll just try this, and like pulls her in to kiss her, and she's down for it until he just headbutts her instead of kissing her, and she goes like flying back in the ice. And I'm just like, dude, that would have been smooth if you had actually done it right. Like,
oh, absolutely. Also, I relate to that content.
What content?
Just that. I'm like, yeah, that's about how that'd go if I did it too.
Headbutting the girl.
Like, I'm like, yeah, that tracks. Also, I'm not a graceful skater. Anyone can tell you that. I'm not very graceful either.
I spend about 35 minutes gripping the wall, and then when I finally have the guts to let go, I'm like very...
Coasting. Just coasting.
I'm very, like, scared. I'm like Bambi on ice, like slipping and just trying to stay, like, upright the whole time.
It's been years since I did it, but last time I did, I was okay.
Like,
I could get off the wall in about 10 minutes, and then I could cruise around, but I couldn't...
Can't do any of that fancy schmancy, none of that Steve Carell skating, where he can just whip all around the place. No,
I could not do that, no.
No. Oh, I meant to say this earlier, flashing back to Samantha pulling his pants down and then abandoning him. There is one thing I wanted to say, but I wanted to save it for the podcast, is that... He's not into her anymore at all, but he was not gonna stop her from what she was about to do, which is just so, like, I feel like every guy is like, I don't like this girl, but I'm not gonna turn down a free blowjob. Like,
no.
If you're willing to go for it, go ahead. Because he's sitting there like being like, just very still and not doing anything.
Unless you are married or in a relationship, why would you stop that?
Wait, oh, I thought you... I was like, wait, you would stop it? And then I realized what you were saying. I thought you were saying from your significant other. And I'm like, but why?
No. Like, if you are married or in a relationship.
Then yes.
And they are trying to advance. Then other than that scenario, why would you stop them from doing that?
I just cracked up. I was like, dude, no guy will say no unless they have to. But yeah, so... Chris and Clark are talking in his dentist's office, and then she has a fear that Chris's lack of affection means that he just doesn't like her. And then Jamie admits that while the two are just friends, she tried to show Chris that she is interested in a relationship. And then Clark tells Chris that the timing wasn't right, and Jamie and Chris's history hinders his willingness to have sex with her. Outside the office, they happen to catch Dusty singing to a sexy nurse and then kissing her. Dusty reveals to Chris and Clark that he only plans to have sex with Jamie, as he wants to humiliate her in the same way that he felt she used to humiliate him when he was a nerd and she was the object of his crush. Which, of course, that's when you see Dusty's true colors. Which I was like, there's no way Dusty is actually this nice of a guy. Like, there's no way.
They're never... In a movie like this, there never is.
No. Not in a movie like this. No.
I mean, overall, it's kind of the whole comedic butt of the jokes that none of these guys are great guys.
Because that's the play in Community with Rich.
Yeah.
The doctor. That's the whole play, is they're doing this kind of character with him, except he actually is that good of a guy.
He actually is that good.
Yeah.
So Jeff is just like,
please.
So the
whole time, Jeff is like... I know that you have, like, a dark, dirty secret and you're not really this good of a guy.
And then, no, he is just that good of a guy. I was just gonna say that he reminded me of Rich.
Yeah, it's just Dusty, dude. God, Dusty.
Dusty is maniacal.
Dusty!
He's a maniac. But Chris tries to warn Jamie, but instead ends up attacking Dusty in front of her. Another psycho moment of the movie, where in a church full of children, he tackles Dusty into the ground. And
what's so funny to me is the entire time, like, Chris is, like, well aware of, like, this is a Christmas pageant for kids. Yes. He's absolutely hyper-conscious. And then, like, he sits there and he's talking to her and he's like, Chris is trying to warn her about Dusty. Dusty pops up. Then he just loses it. I'm like, where did that come from?
I honestly think, again, it has to do with the whole, like, the thing with this movie and with You Again is that it's all centered on becoming your immature prior, like, high school self. And so you lose all of your maturity and, like, dignity that you've gained throughout the years, and you just flash back to being, like, 17 again. And so, like, and so when someone like this just absolutely enrages you, when you're an idiot and you're, like, a teenager, you probably just fight them because you're dumb and you don't think. And so, like, I think that was the whole thing, is that this was him just hitting that, like, low point of, the really low point of the immaturity. And so he's just like, yeah, this is it. Like, I'm done. This is the straw that broke the camel's back. I'm going to tackle you. Like, that's it. But Dusty, like, he's a sick genius. He was laying there on the ground like, master, what are you doing? This is a Christmas pageant. And the second that everyone turns away, he's just like, hey.
Oh, the
yes, his little, like, I hated his little tongue thing so much. It grossed me out. And Jamie won't listen to Chris when he tries to explain. Then Chris gets drunk and goes to the bar where Jamie works, finding her there with Dusty. Again, Jamie refuses to listen, and Dusty tries to convince her to have sex with him. When Jamie very gently turns him down, Dusty storms out of the bar. Chris and Jamie get into another fight, with him blaming her for keeping him in the friend zone and saying that she will never amount to anything. Jamie punches Chris, and he is tossed out of the bar. What was the line that you loved?
Slapped like a cheerleader, then just gets his socks rocked.
No, there was a line that Sam loved when he got thrown out of the bar, that the bouncer...
Oh, it was... So the security guy throws him out and goes, "And stay out!" And then turns around and you just hear him mutter, "I've always wanted to say that."
That was good. That was good. That fight was pretty brutal. Their whole fight where he's like, "And you'll just always be the girl who peaked in high school." I was like, you realize that's going to stay with her for a while. Like, she's going to go home and cry about that all night. Like, because you just said that to her.
That's why you should never make hasty decisions on alcohol. Because that's why you shouldn't drink with Tim.
Yeah. Don't drink with Tim.
Don't drink with
never
Tim.
Never drink with Tim.
Yo, I love the fact that man just straight up got, like, he was going to go home. He was going to be perfectly fine. But no, that man had to get booted off the bus.
He got thrown off the bus for asking the bus driver to pull his finger. And he gets thrown off the bus and then just leaves his luggage in the snow outside and goes inside. And then when he gets back to LA with the luggage, he just throws it off the balcony and down into, like, the trees.
No, it hits a car.
Oh, no, it hits a car. It does hit a car. I don't know whose car, but it hits a car.
Presumably his neighbor's.
Probably.
Presumably.
So that gets into the whole complicated thing of, like, friend zoning people, because I'm a firm believer in, like, so if you know that someone is, like, hardcore into you and they're your friend, then you just need to back off. Like, however, I'm not positive. Like, we don't really know if Jamie actually knew before Chris said anything.
You don't really get a good read on it.
And so I can't say if she was doing anything wrong, because she may have just genuinely thought that they were friends and just been like, yeah, you're just my best friend. Like, that's it. Because he never said anything. And then once he did say something, she was clear about the fact that she just saw him as a brother, and that upset him. Which, again, they did the right thing. They backed off from each other. That's what you gotta do.
I was saying, that was a good repulsion point, and yes. That was like, yeah.
But then when he comes back, you know, people change. People's feelings about people change. And so, like, after all those years, he's still mad about her keeping him in the friend zone when she's clearly interested in him now. And I'm like, dude, get over yourself.
And this is where a lot of the irritation came out from Jamie's perspective. It's like, we just tried something, like, however long ago, because
last night I was
Yeah, she's actively telling him, like, you know, I like you now, and I throw myself at you and you do nothing. He's like, and now you know how it feels. And I'm like, you weren't trying to get revenge on her. Like, you weren't trying to get revenge, so why are you pretending like that was your plan? Because it wasn't. Like, your plan was to actually have a relationship, and you're destroying it.
Right.
Like, I've never understood the friend zone thing. I get that it hurts, and I've been put in the friend zone before, and it sucks. So just back away from that person and just be like, hey, I need some time to get over this, and then maybe we can be friends again.
If you are in the friend zone, this is what I will say on the subject, is if you are in the friend zone, you are willingly putting yourself there.
Yes, you can back away at any time.
At that point, you are so... I get it, sure. Throw the argument out there that, like, better to have that person in your life in some form or another than not at all. But there's a fine line where it's mentally unhealthy to keep that person...
Yes.
That you have that level of feeling for, that close to you,
mm-hmm.
to where it is damaging your psyche... That bad.
Yes. Like, if it's getting to that point, then that's when you tell them, hey, I have feelings for you. I know you don't feel the same way about me, so I need to take a few months and just, we just don't need to talk.
Like, and if like, yo, if they're, like, oblivious to it, like, you know, like, you need to have a talk and sit there and say, hey, look, I have feelings for you, and I need to establish, are these given back, or am I just crazy?
Yes.
If you are in the friend zone, you are keeping yourself there.
Because you don't have to be. You can easily just leave that person's life for a little while until you're over your feelings. And then if you really want them back in your life, you can be like, hey, you know, can we, you know, hang out or something? And then as long as they're really gone, then you can just be friends with that person again. I've done that. Like, where, you know, either I've had to take a step back or someone else has had to take a step back from me for one reason or another. And then sometimes the friendship doesn't start again. Sometimes it does. Like, it's like, it just depends on how serious you are about having that person in your life.
Exactly. It's becomes more of a factor of, like, you are willingly letting yourself. And it only takes, like, a few sentences to sit there and say, like, hey, look, I really appreciate our friendship, but I kind of want this to go a bit further than friends.
Mm-hmm. If you don't feel the same way, then I don't think we need to talk.
We can't be friends anymore, unfortunately. Or we need to take, like, a hiatus, but, like, this is not working, and this is really unhealthy for me to keep this friendship active.
Yeah, and if that person cares about you, then they'll be like, okay, I understand. Like, take all the time you need, and then whenever you're ready, if you're ever ready, you know, give me a call, and we can, you know, try to sort of be friends again. And that's how you do this in a kind way.
Exactly.
And she never, I don't think she did anything wrong. Like, yes, in high school, she shouldn't have said it the way that she, you know, was going to say it.
I think only the wording was really effed up.
Yeah. But even then, she's a high schooler and she was drunk. I can't be, like, too upset at her. And, like, now she's being very clear. She's like, I threw myself
she's
at
matured.
You.
She's matured.
And, like, and instead, he's just reverting back instantly. Like, just being in his hometown
That's the whole butt of his character's arc is that he's reverting back to his old self.
Mm-hmm. Just being in his hometown, he's 17 again. And it's like, don't do that. It was rough. And the whole time, I was just like, I want to talk about this friend zone stuff because it always bothers me the way that, like, the way that the quote-unquote, like, nice guys on the internet talk about the friend zone. I'm like, you can get out of it anytime you want if you just back up. Welcome to our relationship podcast here at Mad Artists.
No, this is coming from a person who, like, through all of high school and middle school thought the friend zone was an actual thing.
Oh, I mean, everyone does in high school.
You have to learn that, you know, like, hey, look, like, I've recently started to get better about, like, you know, like, hey, look, if a person's got to go, I'm working on letting go of people. Like, that's not an easy thing to do.
No.
But sometimes for mental health reasons, you just have to cut that person off. There's no excuse. If you are in the friend zone and labeling it as a friend zone right now, that means you have not developed the skill or the willpower to sit there and willing to let that friend go for your own mental health and safety.
Mm-hmm. And Chris just wasn't doing that. He was, like, even back in high school, he just kept torturing himself by, like, not telling her how he felt. And I'm like, okay. But you know, he was in high school. It's whatever. But now he's, like, throwing it all in her face, blaming her for it. And it's like, no, it's not her. It's not her problem that you were in the friend zone. It's your problem that you didn't say something sooner. Like, you could have said something sooner, or you could have just accepted what she said gracefully and just been like, I'm going to take some time for myself for a while without destroying their entire friendship. But yeah, so he's yelling at her. He gets thrown out of the bar. He returns to Los Angeles and has a frightening reunion with Samantha. Chris realizes, yes, because she's like, I'm trying to be all domesticated like that girl that you were sleeping with behind my back. And he's like, we didn't sleep together. And she's like, whatever. And then she keeps like wanting them to be together and like saying all these things about how like they're going to be so happy and all this stuff.
And that's where my favorite line in the whole movie is.
Yes.
When she's all like, and it can be an open relationship. You can still see other people. You can see other girls. I like girls. Darla.
She's like, I like girls. Darla.
She did share a passionate kiss with Darla for like a solid like 4 seconds.
I know. And Darla's just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. That was great. And then she tases him in the crotch when he tries to just like, you know, tell her to get out. And then
immediately transfers the current by grabbing her leg.
He grabs her leg and she starts getting shocked by it. Then he throws her down and she's like, oh, it's go time. And my first thought was, you just tased him in the crotch. It is not go time. Like, nothing's happening.
And I mean, to be fair, we are brought to the attention that Samantha is psychotic way early in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
But we just never really got the... I mean, you know, like window shots, like, you know, like little pot shots at her psychosis. But like, yo, this is where you're like, holy crap, this chick needs to be in a psychic ward.
Yeah, she needs help very much. Lots of help. But Chris realizes that Jamie is his one and only love. And so he's like, you know, I loved when he's like pinning her down. He's like, no, you can't do that. And she's like, oh, the big speech. I just like, I loved that. Like, that's that dig at like all rom-coms, the moment where there's the big speech. I loved that. and she just did it so well.
Battle of self-aware rom-com.
Yes, I loved it. But yeah, he was like, you can't bully someone into liking you. And I was like, yeah, you can't. Like, you've done to all these women in LA. Like, just bullying them into being like, I want your approval.
The revelation.
Yes. So he goes back to New Jersey, where he declares his love for Jamie, and they finally kiss, which I loved that their very first kiss was so, like, aggressive and awkward and, like, kind of hurt. Because he leans in and kisses her really hard, and she's like, ow. And he's like, sorry, it was 20 years all at once. And then the second one is better, but I loved that that first one was just so, like, gotta get in there. No, that was funny. And then the three kids from the hockey game are watching, and you realize that the cycle has started all over again with this new kid.
Oh my goodness.
And that was just Friends, guys. So if you had to rename this one, what would you rename Just Friends?
I mean, I think you've got to go with Escaping the Friend Zone.
I mean, I was just going to say Living Life in the Friend Zone. Instead of living life in the fast lane.
Yeah.
Slim fit in the suburbs.
Slim fit in the suburbs. So show your work on that one. Maybe I just don't get a reference.
It's him after being, you know, a big guy trying to reassociate himself and try and fit back into the social circles.
Oh,
that
I see
he
what you mean.
Had.
I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
And it was also a play on the weight loss, so it's slim fit in the suburbs.
I see what you mean.
Because he lost all that weight, and it's like, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, and it's, plus it's a slim fit because his personality is trying to, like, fit into this old body, and it's like all his past keeps being broken, but, like, you know, like, Chubby Bunny and all that stuff. So I thought it was pretty clever.
Yeah. I see what you mean.
Not my best work, but I thought it was pretty clever.
I mean, I still think X Games is probably some of your best work.
Oh, X
Games. For Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
X Games.
I think that's probably your best work so far.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's guess. What do y'all think the critical score for this is on Rotten Tomatoes?
I don't think it was that good. Rom-coms very rarely are. I'm going to guess 48%.
Okay.
Going to go with 59.
Sam was closer. It was 42.
Yeah,
42.
That's about right.
Yeah, rom-coms usually
right
don't do well.
Yeah.
And what about the audience score, again, out of 100?
I think audience score is typically a lot higher. I'm going to say about 71%.
Okay.
69%.
You got it exactly, Samuel. 71% is exactly right.
I swear
and...
you cheat.
And what about the IMDb score out of 10?
I'm going to say 5.7.
Okay.
6.1.
You are so close, John. It's 6.2.
Nice.
You were so close. You almost had it. So I could not find a budget for this movie. I could not find it. I looked everywhere.
It's a lot harder to find budgets for like older than mid 2000s.
Yeah, I couldn't find it at all. So, but I know that that it is apparently pretty low budget, and it made $50.9 million. So it probably made money, I'm gonna assume. I can't confirm that, but I think it did. So I went on Amazon. The general consensus by viewers is pretty good. 82% rated it 5 stars. Do y'all want positive or negative first?
Always positive to negative.
Okay. So this review comes from C. Holsing. It's titled, "One of My Favorite Comedies." First, let me say, everyone has a different sense of humor, and take in mind this was filmed in 2005 on a very low budget. If you like Ryan Reynolds comedies from that time, then you'll love this. I still laugh and have been watching this for at least 10 years. I have 5 children, and my older 3 think it's hilarious, and they are 19 and 20. My boys especially love the brother scenes and how Ryan acts pretentious at times, and of course, Anna Faris. My daughter likes all of it. It's a completely exaggerated movie that takes place during Christmas time. Give it a try. I still find things I've either missed or forgot when I watch it each time that are subtly funny. Of course, they love Spaceballs too, and many other older movies of that era, so they get the simplicity and the references. 5 stars.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I've got I've got a couple of short negative reviews here. So the first one was just someone didn't like it. So this is Julia K. It's titled "Dumb and Not Even Fun Dumb." This wasn't even good enough to watch through if you just stumbled on it on a rerun on TV, much less pay for a rental, which we did. Boo. It was awkward and dull, and nothing drew us into the love story. Thumbs way down. 1 star. Yes. And then John Fred said, 2 on the nose. I liked Ryan in The Proposal, but not so much here. Too much overacting and playing to the camera. Pretty sophomoric. And the storyline is too predictable. 2 stars. Those are our this week reviews. I don't know. I can see it from both sides. I think it's definitely a fun and easy to watch movie. Like, it's good to just, like, have something on. But I also get what they were saying. If they're looking for, like, super high quality, this isn't really it. But, so I did find some fun facts about this. So it took 4 hours to put the 12-pound face on Ryan Reynolds. When Reynolds stepped outside in full fat makeup, a fan of his came up to him and asked if Ryan Reynolds was inside. He said yes and pretended he wasn't himself.
Yo, you'd be surprised. Fat suits are a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if any of you have seen X-Men Origins, the Blob, the makeup for that was in, the makeup and the suit was intensive. Like, they had to put cooling gear, like, inside the suit.
Oh, no, I believe it with, like, a lot of fat suits. Like, you have to, like, have fans or something on you, like, constantly.
Oh, absolutely. It's a lot. It's a lot.
And also, to keep up Samantha's continuous aggressiveness and hysterics, Anna Faris continually drank Red Bulls before filming.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. During the outdoor ice hockey game with the kids, a few of the kids playing were wearing covered-up Canucks jerseys. The Canucks are the hockey team in Vancouver, BC, where Ryan Reynolds is from. I did not know that he was from Canada.
Yep.
Yeah, he's Canadian.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
It's part of why he makes fun of Canada so much in... in a bunch of
his
improv movies. And then Deadpool, he makes fun of Canada a couple of times. Because he's Canadian.
It's so good.
Because he can. The body shake that happened between Jamie, happened to the writer, Adam Davis, on a date in real life. Where he went in to kiss, no. She went in to hug, and just ended up shaking her. And this is weird. So on the DVD, an alternate ending was included as bonus material. The alternate scene takes place before Chris's return to New Jersey for his reconciliation with Jamie. After the fight with Jamie, Chris returns to California to find that Samantha has become a more accomplished songwriter by writing a new 10-tracked album, being hailed by Chris's boss, KC, as an instant hit. The new songs on said album are based on their recent tumultuous visit to New Jersey. Meanwhile, Chris falls back into old habits and attempts to forget Jamie by spending time with 3 LA party girls who inexplicably were staying at his home while he was away. Unfortunately, in an attempt to elevate the mood by playing music, they find a demo of Dusty's in Chris's travel bag, which triggers Chris's emotional spiral and a subsequent retelling of the events of the past few days. The girls attempt to comfort Chris, but to no avail. As the scene ends, Chris has a look of longing on his face, and part of this scene, which was Chris spending time with the party girls, is still in the theatrical trailer. So it would have just made the ending, like, not so much of a immediately he comes back to Jersey. Like, he lives some life out there for a little while and then comes back.
A little bit of a time jump. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I get why they didn't. It streamlined it a lot more the way they did it. So
yeah.
I get it.
Right.
So, if we were to recast, who would we play in Just Friends?
John could be Tim.
I was also going to say John could be the record producer guy, Casey.
Yeah.
You could play either of them.
Yeah. That I figured that. I was like, oh, yep, there's the old drunkard. Yep.
Danielle would be Samantha.
Oh, my gosh. That would be so much fun.
You would.
Sam, you could play Clark or Mike. I could see either one of them.
Mike. I would want to play Mike.
Everyone wants to play Mike. Are you kidding me?
Jamie's dad.
Oh, yes!
Because of Christmas lights.
Also, I can absolutely see you in a sweater vest and a full-on button-up.
I don't really like sweater vests.
Doesn't matter. The character does.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying something different.
No, I'm not saying that you personally like it. I just remember what you looked like as Seymour, and that fits.
That actually does fit a lot. Yeah.
Hi, guys. I'm Seymour. I dreamed about Little Shop last night.
Tangent for after this.
That just reminded me.
So, favorite and least favorite moments from this one. I know what one of my favorite ones is.
My favorite moment is just the Darla. Just Darla. And then, of course, that, you know, the opening moment.
The opening moment where you went, oh, my God.
Yeah. Those would be my favorite moments. Least favorite moment, I don't know. The toothpaste stuff was just so gross. It was just so nasty.
Yeah, I guess if I were to have like a least favorite, it probably would be the toothpaste just because of the grossness.
Probably.
Don't get me wrong. It was funny as all get out.
It was very funny, but I get grossed out by things being all over people's faces like really easily. No.
I will say probably my favorite one, and we skipped this in talking about it. And this might somehow justify the retainer, but the fact that he kicked the medic's hand and went straight down the sled.
And then flipped onto his face.
I was like, oh, no, buddy.
Yeah, he made it so much worse on himself so fast.
Oh, the bloody snow.
Yeah, my least favorite was any time there was like his mouth full of blood or the toothpaste. And then my favorite was anything between Ryan Reynolds and Mike. And then the moment where she's like, oh, I got a new song. And his pants just slowly slide down, like, his legs. Like, and he's just, like, sitting there,
the
like,
ADHD
deer in the headlights.
That moment was so strong. Because this chick is about to full-on give this man a blowjob, but instantly gets distracted by, I wrote a new song.
I loved it so much. That was one of my favorite moments. I thought that was hilarious.
That was pretty good.
That was good.
Well comedically timed.
Yes.
That was generally, like, pretty funny.
But yeah, so, out of 10 flaming animatronic Santas, how would you rate Just Friends?
I'd give it 6. I enjoyed it. It's like you said, it's a good background movie.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a good party movie. Like there are people over, you just have the movie on in the background. You can laugh at it. It's funny, but I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it again.
Yeah.
It was somewhat overdone. I think it was a little... I think it could have been streamlined even more. I think it was a little long. But overall, I mean, it was decent. For a rom-com, it was good. I'll give it 6.
I have to agree with Samuel. I'll also give it, like, 6, 5.9 Flaming Santas. It was... Like the negative reason, it was kind of predictable. The storyline was kind of, you know, your standard, you know... rags to riches kind of plot. And again, you know, a lot of the dates could have been, you know, it could have been more filtered as far as like the crap that kept escalating. But also it did play into, I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it again, but like if it showed up on, like if there was like nothing on and it showed up on my like TV guide or something, I wouldn't like not watch it.
Yeah.
But like
If you're sitting in the hotel room and it comes on, you let it play.
Yeah. You just let it go.
Yeah.
So, I'm probably going to be similar. So I'm going to rate this just as a rom-com and not so much like, you know, against a movie like Prestige or something, you know?
Right.
Like I'm rating it on a scale of like, you know, worst rom-com to like best rom-com. So, you know, I've seen a decent amount of rom-coms because my mom, she really likes rom-coms. And I've seen some really bad ones and some really good ones. Knowing that the guy who worked on this also did The Sweetest Thing makes so much sense, because The Sweetest Thing is one of the most absurd rom-coms I have ever seen. If you watch The Sweetest Thing after watching this, you'll think this is the tamest thing you've ever seen. That's a weird rom-com. So this was not as crazy to me just because I've seen that movie. I don't know. I'll rate it slightly higher. I'll rate it more of like probably a 6.7. Just because, honestly, one, I really loved the actress who played Jamie. I thought she did a really, really good job. I felt like she especially was very, like, down to earth with her acting and, like, you know, went more in the realm of, like, realism. And I really liked that. Especially in, like, the fight and, like, in her just different little moments. I felt like she created, like, a well-rounded character.
Well, I think that's the point is this sense of stability in Chris's crazy life that he's living with Samantha, and you know, having to keep tabs on her, it's part of the whole contrast and dynamic, which I think was cool.
Yeah, but I liked her a lot, and there were a lot of like, you know, funny moments. Yes, it was definitely over the top and very crazy, which is why it loses some points, because it didn't build up to that in the right way. It just had like a ton of crazy like constantly, so that when that final like, you know, showdown with him and Dusty happens, it's not the craziest thing that's happened anymore, because Samantha like burned a house display down.
Yeah.
And that was the craziest thing.
Yeah.
I felt like it could have been ordered better. They could have even kept some of the chaotic if they had just built it up to the proper like one that should have been the last one. So yeah, I take off a few points for like some, you know, kind of misordering of scenes and like, you know, this, that, and the other. But for the most part, I feel like it, you know, it tells a fun story. It's very funny with Ryan Reynolds, of course, and Anna Faris being a psycho. And Mike earns lots of points for, he probably earns the whole 0.7 by himself. But yeah, I'd probably give it a 6.7 flaming animatronic Santas. Yeah, just because, like you said, Sam, I probably wouldn't, like, I wouldn't choose to put it on. But again, you know, if it's just on and I'm like, yeah, let's just turn something on. Like, you know, just let it play. Yeah, so that's probably what I would go with it.
Yeah, rom-coms are always very finicky. Rom-coms always suffer in one category, and it's more or less rewatchability is kind of hard for rom-coms.
Yeah.
Because rom-coms, the difference between, like, rom-coms and comedies is, rom-coms, there's quite a bit of punchlines, but there's not as many as in a comedy. So you don't kind of pick, you eventually find all the nuances.
Well, a comedy is normally about the jokes, whereas a rom-com is about the story.
Yeah.
Right.
And so once you know the story, it's kind of hard to watch.
Unless they have a bunch of good gags that like you and your friends really, really love. Like,
right.
I know the movie Bridesmaids is like, it's kind of a rom-com. It's more of just a comedy. But yeah, it has good rewatchability because it's got great quotes and like one-liners that if you and your friend have watched Bridesmaids, you just love rewatching the scenes and just like reliving it and like quoting along with it. And that's the fun of like being able to rewatch something. So this doesn't give as much of that just in the actual like context of the movie. But, you know, if this is something that you and your friends love and, like, you know, you just love rewatching it, then that makes sense. Because there are definitely, like, certain lines in this movie that you may just love quoting. Like, I mean, I loved the whole scene with Mike just sitting on the couch and it's like, did you boink her yet? That means no.
I love the term.
See you around, buddy. And he just leaves, like.
I love the term boinking. Just that's funny enough to me. I will say, like, a good decent standard for rom-coms. From what I've seen, I mean, much like my mother likes rom-coms and Hallmark films just as much as the next mother does. A pretty good standard, I personally loved it, is The Monster-in-Law. That was a pretty, like, solid rom-com where there was enough gags, enough of a story to where it was like, that I could probably rewatch over and over again.
Yeah.
Plus, it's Jennifer Lopez. Why would you not?
There are definitely good things to like about this movie, things to not like about this movie. If you really don't like gross things on people's faces, maybe just skip through the toothpaste scene. Maybe skip through the bloody mouth scene. Other than that, you know, I would recommend it to anyone who just doesn't want to have to watch anything heavy. And it's just like, I just want to watch something stupid for the next, you know, hour and a half. You know, it's not super long. It moves pretty quickly. Like, it doesn't really give you a time to get, like, bored and dragged down.
It's only like an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, it's not very long. So, yeah, I'd recommend it if you just want to, like, throw something on in the quick background watch with your friends. Yeah. But, yeah, so I think that is all we have for you guys today. Yeah, we are currently in the production of our audio drama, The Call of Cthulhu, which is actually funny. Another podcast I listened to, they didn't put out an audio drama, but he put out just an audiobook recording of The Call of Cthulhu like 2 days ago. And I was like, well, look at that.
Hey.
everyone's following the Cthulhu train right now. Yeah, so we're in production for that. Within probably the next few weeks, we're going to be putting out, like, shout-outs to our voice actors and, you know, just shout-outs to, like, our crew and who's, you know, working on it and everything like that. You know, giving you links to their pages and their bios and, if they have it, a website. But yeah, so look for that in the coming weeks. We'll be, you know, trying to get that out there, and we'll be, you know, posting dates for when everything's actually going to get released, which is just going to be a two-part audio drama. It's going to just be split right down the middle. And we'll be letting you know, like, what channel to follow and all that good stuff. But as of right now, you can still, you know, shoot us a message on our social media, or you can email us at banterbox.madartists@gmail.com if you have any questions, comments, corrections, or requests for what we should do in the future. This one was actually one from our virtual request line last Sunday, so if you participate in the virtual request line, then yours might get chosen for the podcast. You might even be able to, you know, come on and join us, or get a little shout out, or send an audio clips, you know, whatever you want to do.
And thank you to those who did actually submit for the audition for Call of Cthulhu.
Yes, thank you so much for those who auditioned.
Absolutely. And also thank you for those who do participate and interact with the guessing interactive and the submissions. They're constantly open. Don't be shy. Don't play coy.
Yeah, you can submit. You can throw out a, you know, a random guess. You know, it's all just supposed to be like a fun interactive thing. But yeah, so you can leave us a review on I believe Apple Podcasts. Spotify doesn't let you, unfortunately. But you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know how we're doing, what we can do better, what we're doing well. We really appreciate it, and we will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.